For some background, the Dallas Mexican American Historical League, DMHAL, is a 501c3 organization dedicated to researching, collecting, and preserving the historical and cultural experiences of Mexican Americans in Dallas from the early 1900s to the present.
Through DMHAL, the Emerging Historian Cohort is a contingent of young professionals assembled by DMHAL lifetime member Rosemary Hinojosa in order to pass on the legacy of preserving our local history to the next generation of historians. Hinojosa, in order to pass on the legacy of preserving our local history to the next generation of historians.
Aquí estamos, porque acá fue donde nos puso la vida. Dejé todo, mis amigos, mi familia y mi ilusión. Y aunque allá he pasado los mejores años de mi vida, decir esto da tristeza, pero acá estamos mejor. Pero acá estamos mejor.
In this episode of the Chronicles of Dallas Barrios podcast, Victoria Farrell Ortiz interviews Jody Voice Yellowfish. Jody is Muscogee Creek, Ogallala Lakota, and Cherokee. Born and raised in Dallas, Texas, Jody is a product of the U.S. government's relocation program. She attended Haskell Indian Nations University in Lawrence, Kansas, where she received her associate's degree in social work and studied for her bachelor's degree in Indigenous and American Indian Studies. Jody is the chair for MMIW Texas Rematriate, Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women, on the steering committee for Dallas Truth, Racial Healing, and Transformation, and was recently selected to be a commissioner on the Arts and Culture Advisory Commission for the City of Dallas. She is also a wife and an adoptive parent to her niece and two nephews. Thank you for joining us today, Jody.
Okay. So, Jody, today, what would you like me to refer to you as?
My name is Jody Voice Yellowfish, and I go by she, her, and hers.
Okay. And, so today I'm interviewing Jody on March 24th, 2021. This interview is being recorded via Zoom. I'm located in Oak Cliff. Where are you located, Jody?
I'm in Oak Cliff, in the Stevens Park area.
Okay. Okay, so I'll go ahead and hop into the childhood questions. Where did you grow up, Jody?
I grew up in Arcadia Park, just on the edge of like West Dallas and Cocker Hill. And yeah, that's the neighborhood I lived in and at the elementary school I went to. But outside of being in my specific neighborhood in Arcadia Park, I would, you know, just all over Oak Cliff, basically. It's almost like that's all I knew was Oak Cliff until, I guess, middle school, actually, until I kind of ventured out of that comfort zone, that area that I had always known.
Didn't venture out too much either. But will you tell us about your family?
Yeah, so my family, my parents are Wilson Hitcher and Tony Voice Hitcher. I have three sisters, and two older and one younger than myself. My parents met here in Dallas, Texas. My mother, her father, my grandfather, he was in the Army and the Air Force, and they just traveled around a lot, you know, because of that. But they ended up here in Dallas, and they actually, when they moved here, they stayed where all the families that came through relocation lived. They moved to the Elmer Scott Housing Project in West Dallas. And my father, he actually came to Dallas on the relocation program. He attended Haskell Institute, which is a tribal college. Actually, my father, my sister, myself, and my niece, we all graduated from Haskell. It was a military boarding school to begin with, which was, you know, the military basically stole children, you know, took them away from their families, put them in these boarding schools to, you know, their motto was to kill the Indian and save the man, which was, you know, literally there's photographs of that, you know, as like almost as a marquee as you would enter the campus where these were. So it was, went from a boarding school to a high school, to a technical college, which was, and it was Haskell Institute, and then a junior college, and now it's a university. And that's where I went to university at. But my father, he was in the machinist on the machine shop program at Haskell Institute. And he graduated in 1969, and thought he was signing up for a program, some kind of work-related program, because he just got a degree, you know, just got a certificate and was looking for work and thought that's what this program was, but he had actually signed up for the relocation program. And they basically, they bought him a suit, gave him a Greyhound ticket, and he was headed to Dallas with no family, no knowledge of anything about a big city, let alone Dallas specifically. But you know, they made it, they survived the culture shock and everything, and found each other as adults, and you know, then the rest is history. You know, they began their relationship, you know, married, had a family, and you know, as a family, as it's just starting out, we lived over in Bishop Arts when I was really tiny, and then right by Sunset High School. And then by the time I was starting elementary school is when my parents found a house in Arcadia Park, and they still live there. In the same spot. They had a house fire a few years back, and they rebuilt, and they're still in the same spot, same corner, same busy corner. Everybody knows that. That's where they live, at that corner. It's a really big house. It's a really big house on that two little blocks right off of the main street. So people know our family in the neighborhood.
That's cool. Do you have any siblings?
Yes, I have two older sisters and one younger sister.
And can you talk about maybe some of like your fondest childhood memories, or if you can't think of one specific memory, just memories overall?
Yeah, so, you know, it was funny, just the other day, my sister and I, you know, because we think about, you know, us raising our kids, because my sister, myself, and my husband, we raise our niece and two nephews, and, you know, we didn't plan on, none of us, all three of us hadn't planned on children, really. We were really content with, you know, the freedom we had with, you know, travel, things like that. And then the situation arose where we, you know, needed to step up and raise our family. And so, you know, we've just had a crash course on being parents. And, you know, we talk about a lot, like, man, are we just like overprotective, or because we look back at what we were doing at these ages. And, you know, I think about, I mentioned the other day about being able to walk the neighborhood at, you know, whenever I wanted. I was an athlete. I loved playing basketball, and I would literally walk from one end of the neighborhood to one basketball court to the other, to the recreation center to use that basketball court, just all day long, just back and forth, just talking to whoever, doing whatever, and I could be gone all day. So there was that freedom, but I think there was like a sense of security I had, because I wouldn't have done that in another neighborhood. You know, I had that sense of security in my neighborhood, you know, to walk around my basketball all day and talk to friends and chat with whoever and check in with my parents here and there. And
was so that in Oak Cliff or in Arcadia Park that you were doing that walking back and forth?
In Arcadia Park.
In Arcadia.
Yeah, just all day long. But
no, but I understand. I love your posts about your babies. They're so cute. They're beautiful.
Thank you.
And I'm a mama too, and so I appreciate like your overall parenting outlook. I really you know, I see like a lot of like reparenting things that you're doing with your babies, and I admire that. Because I know like you have teens, right?
Yeah, I have a 14-year-old and soon to be 13-year-old.
Yeah. So Emily's not there yet, but I know she will be. And anyway, I think y'all are cute. what did a normal day at home look like for you?
A normal day at home looked like I can remember like my father waking us up, but then not being there too long because he would have to leave really early for work, and he never worked real, you know, near home, so it was always a drive, so he had to leave early and come back kind of late. But I can remember him waking us up, our mom getting us ready, and we lived so close to the elementary school we went to. It was like, it would literally be like two houses away. Like we just walked. So it's like, you know, that was our thing. We just walked, all the time. And yeah, I mean, as a kid, I always enjoyed school. So I was always happy to go to school and be with friends. And I can remember always being excited to tell my mom what I learned or, you know, what I found was fun or something. And, you know, I thought that was just me, but she totally remembers it too. And she talks about how it made her excited that I was excited to tell her those things. But yeah, I mean, really simple. And we live really close to my grandparents. It seemed like we always had cousins around, either living with us or living with my grandmother. So we were always near family. And when I think back on it, like I really wish I had more family close that my kids grew up with like that. You know, the age differences are so different and the proximity, you know, is so different. You know, I didn't really think about it as something to kind of cherish at the time, but it really was something very special. And yeah, I mean, a lot of time spent outside. You know, I tell my kids that now too, like, why don't you go outside, or why you don't want to be outside? Like, we just always wanted to be outside. You know, we didn't, you know, we were pretty poor, you know, we didn't, you know, it was a poor neighborhood. We didn't, you know, I tell my kids, you know, we didn't have cable. We never had, we didn't even have central heat and air. We had one AC in one room. The rest of the house was hot. We never, you know, never had my own room until I moved out. You know, I tell them these things just because not only do I guess, want them to appreciate what they have now, but I guess kind of understand where we come from with different ways of thinking and sharing and doing certain things and what was fun. And for us, like, I think that's kind of the things I try to tell them when they talk about, you know, video games or, you know, those things. You know, like I said, we were just always outside. If we couldn't do it outside, we probably didn't have it. You know, you're not playing video games outside. You're riding a bike or playing some kind of sports. And that's what we did. Because we actually were really lucky with the house that my parents live in now that we grew up in is actually two lots. So we had a huge yard to be in. So it wasn't just a little plot of grass on the side of the house or the front yard. We had a huge yard to like to be in and do whatever we wanted, really. So we were really lucky like that.
That sounds like so much fun. And yeah, I can hear what you're saying about like generational differences about kids, like mm-hmm. being inside versus outside. What role did your culture or religion play in your household?
I guess, like, you know, per religion, you know, we weren't really religious in any way. We never went to church. We didn't kind of subscribe to that part of the religious culture, you know, in any way. But as like culturally, you know, my family, my father's Cherokee from Stillwell, Oklahoma. My mother is Muscogee Creek from Eufaula, Oklahoma, and Oglala Lakota from South Dakota. And so those tribes, well, I guess like, you know, Creek and Cherokee tribes, they don't really do powwows, you know, the big community gatherings people are really known or think of when they think of tribal people. My Lakota side or Sioux side, that tribe does participate in that, but it was something that we always knew about but didn't really fully participate in until maybe I was a teenager or so. We would attend different gatherings, and one thing I think when you think about American Indians living in big cities like Dallas, especially that came through on relocation program, was, you know, when you're a relocation site, you have a lot of different tribes represented. And even though you're different tribes, you're still connected through different things, you know, shared culture and shared beliefs and shared ways you view family and how you live and grow together. And one thing that really brought people together was sports. American Indians always, any community, you have athletes, you play basketball, the girls and boys, men and women, basketball, softball, were really big things. And those were just as important as attending, you know, church or dances, the same way, because they were bringing people together for, you know, really, really happy, joyous times. You know, like, not only were you physically active and feeling well and feeling good, but you came together and you met people you haven't talked to in a while, and you got to chat and share food and stories and things like that. So that was something that was really important, is just being tribal citizens, being American Indian, and gathering in those types of ways. As like cultural, outside of like athletics and stuff, like we did powwows, just like I said, not until I was probably a teenager did we like really, really get involved to where we dressed using our regalia and things like that. And then once that kind of started within my life, my mom and my sisters really embraced helping me like get my outfits together, and started to learn how to sew and bead and make things like that. I think that was like the biggest part of our culture at that point, and it just slowly grew as we all got older.
I have some follow-up questions about what you just shared. I kind of wondered, do you feel like your family specifically, like your mom and dad, chose not to be like to have a relationship with the church because of that history of colonization with the church and Native American people?
I think to an extent, I don't think it was outright like they made this choice to decolonize their family in that way, but I think it was more that maybe they never felt as comfortable as their parents or family felt within the church. I kind of feel like they felt like maybe they didn't have the choice to participate, so they wanted their children to have the choice. So it was never just really pushed real hard, but it wasn't, you know, like you couldn't do this or anything. We did have the choice, and, you know, I can remember times where it definitely piqued my interest and I wanted to understand a little more about the practice of, you know, Sundays and people doing these things and just understanding that. But of course, you know, as I got older, I understood maybe even though they didn't say it outright that way, I knew that did affect their ideas around beliefs like that.
Okay, I see. Yeah, that's understandable.
And I think just too, as growing up and getting to know them more as people and not just my parents, I understood, you know, their, especially my father, I understood his feelings about why he didn't want to go, or, you know, that to having, you know, having not going say a lot about yourself as well. I think he embraced that and taught us that in different ways without telling us like, you don't have to do this or you shouldn't do this or anything like that.
And then I wanted to ask about like your dresses and beadwork. Is that something where you would typically buy what you wear, or is it like in your point of view, like better to make it or have it made by like a family member?
Mm-hmm. Me personally, I feel like, you know, you should, or your family should try to make it, but I know that's not always a reality for some people. And, you know, the sad thing is, you know, there's a lot, you know, I feel, especially in the city, more than not, there's a disconnect from your culture in certain ways. And, you know, we definitely deal with the struggles of people being adopted and people generations losing entire connections to their culture and then having to relearn those ways, you know, as an adult. So I definitely would never say not to to buy something from somebody if that's going to, you know, help somebody learn about their culture or stay connected. I think, you know, just having dresses and outfits, you know, or regalia of any sort, it's not just about the fashion or the look. It's definitely lessons tied into everything that you wear and why you wear it or why you shouldn't wear it at this time or that time. So it's definitely up to the person that's, if you are going to buy it, which, you know, I mean, they're artists that create these things and they definitely need support as well. But it is up to the individual, I feel like, to understand protocol and respect the responsibility of wearing things and knowing the difference between, you know, appreciating your culture and then appropriating culture, you know, in some way, because we can do that to ourselves as well if we don't understand the why or the how it's made and things like that.
Yeah, very, very good points. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. How would you describe race relations when you were growing up? And did issues of colorism ever appear?
Yeah, race, you know, growing up, I feel, you know, I mean, there was never, you know, there was never a lot of American Indian students in any school I ever attended until basically I went to a tribal college. You know, because there were times where I know, you know, my sister and myself were probably the only American Indians at a school. I don't think I've ever been to a school in Dallas that had more than 5 American Indians at one time, possibly. And then they would be in different grades and different classes. And so, you know, I grew up feeling alone a lot at times. You know, even though I had friends and, you know, growing up in Arcadia Park, especially in, you know, Oak Cliff, West Dallas area, you know, you grow up with a lot of Mexican-Americans and you look alike, you look, you know, just alike, you know. And so there were, you know, I grew up with everyone assuming I was Mexican, I could speak Spanish. And but with that came a lot of, you know, if I didn't speak Spanish, I must have been white. My name didn't sound Mexican, so I must have been white. Or, you know, why was I choosing not to speak Spanish? You know, I mean, I got called a liar. I got called dumb. And this was, you know, not just by students, not just by my peers. This was by adults as I got older. Just like, why are you choosing to be white and not Mexican? And so then explaining to people that I was American Indian, and, you know, I don't speak Spanish. My, not just my family, but my people don't speak Spanish, you know, that's not us, you know. And then it would, you know, I got things flipped on me, like, well, what is your language then? Like, how do you speak it? And, you know, the sad fact of the matter is that colonization, you know, we don't know our language. We're not fluent in our language, you know, so it made me feel really bad, like trying to understand why, not just myself, but my parents or my family, like, why didn't we know our language? And then as you get older and you're able to understand the violence associated with why you don't know your language, you know, it got really real. And that's when, like, I would, the younger I was, I would kind of dismiss comments about, you know, myself, you know, just kind of just, you know, that's dumb, I'm just gonna leave that alone. But as I got older, it's like, it was more, you know, more anger, not necessarily at that person, whoever would say it, because those were only moments in time, you know, literally a minute out of my life to have a dumb comment said to me. But the anger would just stay with me and be like, you know, I'm not even mad about what this person said. I'm more mad that I don't know this about myself, or my people don't know this about ourselves. So there was always a lot of questioning everything about myself, you know, just, or, you know, what was really bad is when, you know, when your teachers do know you're American Indian, you know, you're expected to know all of your history, every tribal history, even if it's not your tribe, or, you know, you're expected to have that opinion, you're expected to share your culture, even when you may feel almost embarrassment because nobody else can do it with you. You know, you're literally the one person in this classroom setting, or this whatever setting, you're always, or I always felt I was the only one. Until maybe middle school, I had a friend that was, and then in high school, it was like a handful more. So, you know, you always felt.
Which school did you go to, Jody?
So elementary school, I went to Arcadia Park Elementary. Middle school, I went to Longfellow Academy in Lovefield.
I went there too.
Oh, did you? Yeah, I went there, and then I went to Skyline. And I didn't do so well at Skyline. And then I went to Molina High School. That's where I graduated from.
I see. And I hear everything you're saying, and I can totally understand how that would be, like, just being put on the spot and being, like, summoned as a representative, as, like, a whole group of people, like you said, that have so many, like, there are so many tribes. Yeah. And I was doing a land designation, and I was just like, wow, there's so many, and I had no idea. And it's just, like, that onus can't be put on a kid. And a kid that is, like, dealing with all of the implications with colonization on top of that. And also, I want to kind of, like, address, like, my mandala and my woven tapestry here, because I know that we've been talking about, like, art and, like, appreciation versus appropriation, because I'm not sure if maybe, like, it's something that you noticed and wondered about, but I'd love to share about it with you and see maybe what you think, what I could do better. But I'm multiracial, and my dad's family is white, and they traveled a lot to New Mexico. And my dad had these in his apartment. He lives with us now. My dad went through, like, a hard time, and he's living with us now, but he gave them to me. But it's something I feel a little weird about, just because, like, my dad's white family bought it, you know, and I know it's supporting an artist who's, you know, like, their income is made this way. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to hear maybe, like, your thoughts, and see how I could be doing better, truly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think one thing, you know, with even, you know, I have had this conversation a lot, actually, just here lately, with understanding how to support artist or movement work or anything specific to a people, like with MMIW work or anything like that. And my first thing is always to tell people is, you know, if you can get it local, the better. You know, so if they were somewhere, you know, your family that purchased these, you know, the artwork you have, if those people are from that area, I feel like that's all the better. Like if you happen to be in, you know, like Albuquerque is a major hub in New Mexico for American Indian art. Like if it was there, you have a really good chance of supporting the actual artist that made it. And but you can always ask too. You know, we have the Indian Arts and Crafts Act as well, the American Indian Arts and Crafts Act, where people, you know, if they say they're American Indian, they're supposed to be able to tell you more about themselves. But then too, it's like, I know sometimes that comes up where, you know, people don't want to support that because that deals with your tribal citizenship, and then that deals with blood quantum and us having to prove who we are. So that's why I always kind of go back to, if you can buy it local from where that person lives, I think that's better. You know, you have a better understanding of their connection of why they're creating that kind of art. You know, like I know like the textiles, the woven, you know, the woven work, the rugs and things like that. Is really specific to Arizona and New Mexico. And so it's like, if you get something like that, you do get the story. You do get the story of where they're from and where they learned from. And that's something I know, you know, Native artists, like they don't shy away from sharing is, you know, how they learned. Because that's a part of the art. You know, that's a part of them creating it and them gifting it to people in a sense. You know, I've seen artists, my sister, she bought, was it pottery? I can't remember. It was a really small piece of pottery. And she was just like, oh my gosh, this, you know, this artist, you know, him and his wife, they created these. And when you buy them, they, you know, they say a little prayer with you over this pottery because they're their children and they're giving their children to you. And I was just like, oh my goodness. She's like, oh my gosh. She's like, me and, you know, her friend that was there, she's like, we were just emotional talking to this guy, talking about his passion for what he created. So I feel like to know if you're appreciating or appropriating is kind of the tale of how you got it. You know, the story that you learned in getting it and the story of getting it, I feel like helps you kind of determine, you know, if I should have it or not. In the simplest sense is, you know, like how do you got it and the story. And I think the feelings attached to that help you understand if maybe your family came about it the right way or I came about it the right way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that, Jody. I'm going to be thinking about it and what I could do after that, because it's something I've been thinking about a lot. Now we're moving on to the neighborhood specific questions, and we have 28 minutes. In what year did you move to Oak Cliff?
I can't think of the year. You know, I was born in Dallas, and we lived, like I said, we lived in the Bishop Arts area in near Sunset from when I was a baby to like 5 years old. And then I started elementary school in Arcadia Park. Up until I moved to Kansas, I never lived anywhere else. I lived somewhere in this vicinity in Oak Cliff or the West Dallas area, you know, being Arcadia Park. And that's all I really knew. You know, I didn't, you know, because that's what I knew my whole life. So I guess I'm trying to think of the year I would have started elementary school is when I would maybe 89, 90, something like that. Like when I started school and was in Arcadia Park, but before then was just kind of around in Oak Cliff area.
How would you describe the Oak Cliff neighborhood as a community?
If I'm describing it to people, I know like, you know, it has its, it's people are conditioned to think that it's really rough and tough and, you know, this and that, but I never really saw it that way. Even growing up, you know, teenager to young adult, when maybe you don't necessarily live your life in the safest way and you see a lot more than you should have and things like that. Like, I always got this sense of pride in everything about Oak Cliff, people from Oak Cliff, and the food, the sounds, the things you buy, you know, I mean, growing up, you know, it was a treat to hop on the DART bus to go up and down Jefferson in the summer. You know, it was a treat to, you know, that was where we got our school clothes. You know, we weren't going to the mall. We weren't going to, you know, more expensive places. You know, we hopped the bus and we went to a couple of shops down on Jefferson, you know, to find the cool clothes and find the things. And, you know, so, you know, as much as, you know, people can talk about poverty or, you know, bad things, violence, anything like that, it's, there's still just that sense of comfort and security being around people that look like you and know your struggle and understand, you know, different things about you, like having to ride the bus everywhere or walking up and down everywhere. And yeah, I think there's just that Oak Cliff is just, there's a sense of pride of being from Oak Cliff and being in Oak Cliff and knowing that all the neighborhoods that make up Oak Cliff, you know, it's Oak Cliff and South Oak Cliff in my eyes, and I've always felt that way. I don't understand when people talk about different areas and different directions in Oak Cliff. I'm just like, well, that's Oak Cliff. That's not north or west or whatever. I'm just like, I read those in articles and I'm just like, wait, where is that? Like, I don't even understand East Oak Cliff. Where is that? Like,
yeah.
To me, so.
North Oak Cliff is being like rebranded. Everybody just thinks it's only Bishop Arts. You know? What are some of your favorite spots in Oak Cliff, and are they still in existence?
Yeah, I feel like, of course, being like at Kid Springs Park always takes me back to being a kid. Keys Park, you know, like I said, like, I mean, I really liked sports and things like that. So things like that always got my attention really young. But as growing up, like, there are just things like, you know, I can talk about like Aunt Stell's, you know, like snow cones or something, and my kids don't know why it was so great or why we miss it so much. Like, and not just that it was like great snow cones, but it was like you stood in line and you saw your friends, you saw people, and that was somewhere you got to gather. Or of course, I mean, we weren't rich by any means. So, you know, any of the thrift stores like Thrift Town over in off of Westmoreland, you know, that was another back to school stop, you know, like you wanted some new clothes, you had to go Thrift Town. yeah, there's just tons of spots in Oak Cliff. And when I mentioned Jefferson, I thought about the Urban Intertribal Center. What it's known as now, they used to have the Dallas Intertribal Center, and that was located on Jefferson. And so these Indian centers, they have, they would have a clinic and like higher ed and job resources available for people. And so if we were sick, you know, we had to hop a bus and go down Jefferson. That's something I can remember. It's not located in Oak Cliff anymore. They have a newer, bigger facility in the medical district now. But that was definitely something that, growing up, that was Oak Cliff. You know, like you got to hop on the bus, and you know, I can remember, you know, that bus route, you know, to get there, and where we would have to wait and things like that. But yeah, when I think about Oak Cliff too, I think about Jefferson between like Zang and all the way down to like, you know, going towards like Cocker Hill. Like, that was Oak Cliff for me, you know. And or I think about the zoo. I think about Dallas Zoo a lot too. I think about Oak Cliff. Yeah, there's just tons of things that pop up when I think about Oak Cliff.
Did Oak Cliff always have the stores that you and your family needed? Like an example would be a tortilleria, but I don't know what that is for someone who's American Indian. Like, is there a store that exists for you all that you all, your family missed because you weren't somewhere else?
I think, you know, when I think of, like, when I think of if we had, you know, everything we needed, when you think about the location of Arcadia Park, like where it is now, and you think about, you know, like Cocker Hill Road, and it's like, there's the Walmart and tons of restaurants, and now there's Amazon just on Chalk Hill Road. Like all of that used to just be like woods. Like there was nothing but trees. You know, until I was in high school did it start to change. Like it was like that my whole life. And there was one tiny grocery store in our neighborhood. And, you know, so we had to drive anyway if you wanted more variety of anything, if you wanted any kind of restaurants, if you wanted, even if it was fast food, you know, you had to go. It was a little drive, you know, even gas until I was a little bit older. Did they have the corner stores at the gas station, you know, with gas available? So I just, that was always something, you know, I lived with, but wasn't aware that our location affected that, you know. And it's like, even growing up, I can remember getting teased that Arcadia Park was just country, you know, because we were so far away from everything. You know, we weren't right in like Ledbetter or West Dallas. We weren't right in Cocker Hill. We weren't right in Oak Cliff. We were just kind of out on our own. And, you know, I would have friends, you know, in high school be like, yeah, I don't even have sidewalks. Like, and you know, that's how it was, you know. But so that was a part of the draw to be a part of, you know, the bigger life that was Oak Cliff, you know. Like, you know, they did have the funner, prettier, colorful things that I didn't have in our neighborhood. So like being, you know, wanting to go to different high schools or anything like that was, I think, understandable in a sense. Like it was funner, it was newer, it wasn't so outdated, you know.
Did you or any of your family members happen to ever own a business in Oak Cliff?
No.
No? Okay. Would you say that the Oak Cliff from 2021 is different from the Oak Cliff that you grew up in, and how so?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely different. And again, I come back to that feeling of, you know, that security and that safe feeling, because what was available was for you. You know, we weren't having to, you know, like I said, you know, we didn't always go to the mall. We didn't always go to these other places to get our needs met. We went to places where everybody looked like us. You know, we went to places where, you know, even if it was, you know, Spanish music or Spanish speaking, that's where I felt comfortable. Even though, you know, because I wasn't going to get it questioned. I wasn't going to get looked at, because, you know, we all looked alike. Now, like if I'm in Oak Cliff and different areas like Bishop Arts or something, now I feel like I'm being watched or I feel out of place or something. And I think that's something, if you didn't go, you know, go through that or grow up really utilizing the shops and things like that all over Oak Cliff, then you may not feel it as much, the difference now. But yeah, that was definitely, you know, something that I can feel the difference in. You know, even though there are places in Bishop Arts, like, you know, this is a cool spot or a cool restaurant, or, you know, you might have had a good experience. It's so different. And, you know, in reality, it wasn't built for everybody that lived there, that they pushed out. And, you know, that's the sad part of it. It's like, I go through there and I think about that. I think about, you know, where do all these people go? Or I go and I see like North Oak Cliff Library and I'm just like, God, I remember spending hours and hours in the weekend there just loving it. And I look around, I'm like, there's a giant apartment complex right there. I'm like, this is so, so weird as to what it was when I utilized it.
Yeah, I understand. I like whenever the pandemic happened, I hadn't driven through Bishop Arts in a while. And oh my goodness, it just expands every time I happen to pass by.
Yeah, it's getting taller now. Everything's getting higher. And that's what's blowing my mind when I go through there now. It's like, it's so, it doesn't even feel real.
Yeah, it's out of place and weird. Can you describe a memorable historical event that happened in Oak Cliff?
Man, I don't know. Something that happened in Oak Cliff, like, I don't know, that's kind of hard to remember.
Yeah, it is a hard one. Most people kind of think about, like, the JFK assassination and, like, oh, I was in Oak Cliff when I found out about it. But if, you know, like, that's prior to your life, then that's not something that you were here for. But I can go to the next question. What's your vision for Oak Cliff? What do you hope for us?
My vision for Oak Cliff would kind of be, I want, you know, I can kind of see how, you know, I mentioned before, like, things were created and built, you know, the newer things, like how Bishop Arts area that, you know, how that is now, that maybe they weren't made for us, because it displaced so many people. But I kind of feel like, you know, there are a lot of aspects of that change that could have been for us. You know, a lot of the healthier, you know, healthier restaurants and different, you know, fashionable boutiques, things like that, that, you know, that shouldn't have been built without us in mind, you know, without us thinking that we could utilize those spaces. And we do have healthier lifestyles than what people are assuming of us. So I feel like these spaces in different ways, you know, athletic spaces, you know, food spaces, you know, may that be restaurants or grocery stores. I feel like the need for these places to be built and owned by people of color, that's the vision I think needs to happen. Because I think it's there's so many people that want to do that. So many people see the need that, you know, Black and brown people in Oak Cliff area want and need. They see it. They know what's wanted, how it could be utilized, how it could be beneficial. And we shouldn't have to go to an area where maybe we don't feel comfortable or anything like that. So I hope, you know, the vision is that, you know, these healthier outlets are more common in the near future.
Yeah, I hear you. With being from West Dallas, Trinity Groves really irks me.
Yeah. So
we're told, you know, like, oh, this is going to be West Dallas owned businesses, and that's not how it's been.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I understand. What do you think about the construction project by the Dallas Zoo, or like the Deck Park is what it's being called? Do you have an opinion at all?
When I've looked into it and tried to understand it all when it first started to be talked about, it is exciting. You hear what it could be and you're like, oh, that's really cool. Like, but again, you know, I started to think, who is that going to push out? Who is that going to keep out? And, you know, why does it have to be so massive to, you know, I felt like it does cause a division. Like, it is going to push people out. And so it brings up a lot of different feelings for me. Like, because, you know, I see, like, you know, the Clyde Warren Park and how it's beautiful and it's right in the center of things and it's over the freeway like that. And, like, it's a really neat thing, but I don't utilize it, you know, and I don't know many people that do. So I wonder how that is going to affect the neighborhoods around there. You know, I wonder, you know, are they going to get business that draws their, the business they have already out? You know, like what kind of traffic and pollution will that bring into these poor communities that do surround that area? You know, and then, you know, and then I wonder about, you know, when new fancy things are built, you know, that brings in more police. And I wonder about the criminalization of people of color and poorer people or homeless people. Yeah, so those are where my mind tends to go when I think about that DEC project.
Yeah, all of that makes perfect sense. Now we're on the concluding questions portion. What has your family life looked like recently?
Family life, you know, when I think about my family, I know it's not the traditional kind of family, you know, there's three parents in my home, you know, myself, my husband, and my sister. We have three children that biologically aren't ours. And so all of that alone is a lot to navigate, you know, raising children with special needs or emotional and mental health needs. We have to navigate all of that and still make our lives be fun and playful and loving and all of that. So it's been a journey trying to be the best parents we can. And once we kind of got to a point where, you know, we were comfortable with being parents and our family and home life and everything's kind of got kind of calm and had a sense of normalcy to everything, you know, school, work, you know, family life. Then I started to go ahead and, you know, get back into the swing of different types of organizing and different projects in the city and with different groups and businesses and whatnot. So like for me, it's busy. Our lives are so busy. We live by a schedule and a calendar, and you know, these things are, you know, some people like, I don't know how you do this. Like, you're so busy. But it's because I think we've all chosen, you know, everybody in our home, we've all chosen to do the things that we want to do, not that we feel obligated to do or pushed to do. And I think that's the biggest, you know, most important piece to our life is, you know, we tend to do what we want to do. You know, we homeschooled when the pandemic hit. That changed everything about us. And that really changed us, I think, for the better, to give us that time to reflect and really see how, what we needed to do for each other and with each other. And so on every day for us, like right now, really is to that schedule and really trying our best to be our best with each other. And maybe that's not always outside of our home, but I think we're at a point, you know, within my family and my home is like, family is definitely number one. And it took us a long time to get here. You know, we had to go through a lot, but things are really good. And that's, I think that sums up our, what our days look like right now.
Yeah, that's a lot. Homeschooling, oh my goodness. My heart goes out to all the parents dealing with that. If you could go back and tell your younger self one thing, what would you tell yourself?
Something I would tell my younger self would be, it gets better. You know, I know that sounds really cliche, but I think there were a lot of times in my life that I just questioned everything and didn't really have answers. So there was a lot of confusion and anger about things about myself and my family and my place in community and in school. And I think just giving myself a little bit of grace, which I didn't fully understand then, would be a saving grace for myself. is that to understand that, you know, this may suck right now. This may not be the greatest or the best situation, but it will get better. I think if somebody would have just said that, I would have taken in everything that happened in my life on so many different levels. I think I would have tried things differently. Maybe not have been so harsh on myself or others or my family. I think that's what would be my advice.
Ew, I'm taking that one to heart. I needed to hear that. Do you keep in touch with your friends or mentors from the community here in Oak Cliff?
I have a lot of friends that I still have from even back in like elementary school. And I know that's because of like social media as well. Having that connection. I don't know if I would really say I had like mentors growing up. I know that I still organize with people that have been very influential in my organizing life. I stay in touch with a lot of people. And I know a lot of people know that, you know, growing up in, you know, Arcadia Park, Oak Cliff, you know, things like that is a big part of me. And I know like that connection has helped me keep connections.
Yeah. Is there anything that you want to discuss that we haven't touched on?
No, not that I can think of.
Okay. Yeah. Or any other Oak Cliff stories you might have that you think are important and you would like included?
I don't know. I have to think on that. Like, you know, that's kind of like, you know, the historical event question you asked. I was like, I can't think of anything right now, but I'll definitely think on that though.
Okay, great. I'll go ahead and stop recording.
Damal is very appreciative of your time today, Jody. Thank you so much.
Nos puso la vida. Dejé todo, mis amigos, mi familia y mi ilusión. Y aunque allá he pasado los mejores años de mi vida, decir esto da tristeza, pero acá estamos mejor. Pero acá estamos mejor. Como extraño ver llover y ese sazón de mi viejita.